Hello, my name is Lars Kurt. I'm the Zen Community Manager. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Xen, how it's about the overall architecture, what's happening in the community, what's coming, and so on and so forth. So, as the previous speaker already mentioned, Xen's been around for some time. There's quite a few changes happening in the Xen community. But let's talk about, you know, what the Xen open source community really covers. So, today we have a number of sub-projects within Xen. Xen's also been moving from a Citrix-sponsored project to a Linux Foundation-sponsored project, and as part of that, the project's been renamed. But in terms of technologies which we cover, it's the hypervisor, there's a tool stack, which I'm going to explain a little bit later, called XAPI. There's an ARM port for the Xen hypervisor. And more recently, there's also Library OS, which sits on top of Xen, which we call Mirage OS. In terms of governance, the Xen community really pretty much operates as a mixture between a Linux kernel development model and Apache. And that means we have things like this, consensus decision making. We don't have Linus or somebody like Linus who puts his foot down and basically steers where everything's going. We have a project management committee instead. We have an incubator, as in Apache as well, and the project's basically funded by 12 large companies today, which we call the advisory board. So I started working with Xen about 2 years ago, and if you look at the sort of sum of the contribution stats in the last 2 years, which you can see here on the graph, it's really our contributor community is diversifying. You know, from really six large vendors and Citrix being dominant, you know, in the community, to 13, you know, large vendors contributing to the project. And actually, if you compare the diversity and the sort of churn which is happening in Xen and KVM, actually they're quite similar. And a lot of this is really driven by new feature development. And in 2013, we're actually seeing that whole process of diversification is continuing. But let's talk about hypervisor architectures a little bit first. So typically we have two models. I just want to quickly throw this up to provide a reference point. You know, we have type one hypervisors. Now you see, you have the host hardware, you have the hypervisor with the device drivers in it, basically just MMU management, scheduling, and so on. And then you have, you know, the virtual machine sitting on top. In comparison, you have your type 2 hypervisor, where basically the hypervisor itself runs as part of the host operation system, you know, as a set of device drivers, both in ring 0 and as a user-level VMM. But coming back to Xen, right, so Xen's not your traditional type 1 hypervisor. I call it type 1 with a twist, and that becomes interesting later when you talk about the relationship between Xen and Linux. So let's just compare and look at some of the differences. If you look at your typical type 1 here, you see you have all your device drivers and also the device models, which basically emulate your I/O devices, for which we typically use QMU, as part of the hypervisor. And that means you have to keep on porting them to different hardware, or you have to use tricks as VMware does to get around licensing issues. What we do with Xen, in Xen we basically just reuse the device drivers of the host operating system, and we also use QMU to emulate I/O devices. Xen and Linux. So the previous speaker covered a bit about the need of, you know, that actually you need to have a different kernel, a specific distro to run Xen. Now today, this isn't actually really true anymore. If you use a stock Linux kernel, with a version newer than 3, basically you get all the support you need to run Power Virtualization both as a host as well as a guest in your stock kernel. So a lot of the issues we had in the past, you know, where Linux distributions had to support two different kernels, that's not true anymore. And as a consequence, we've actually started seeing Xen support getting back into Linux distributions today. And I'm going to cover a little bit about CentOS later, because there's some activity happening in this space. And the only big exception today is Red Hat's RHEL 6. You know, where Red Hat fundamentally made a conscious decision to back KVM. But maybe, you know, there's some scope in the future as well. But from a user's perspective, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, whether Xen's part of the kernel or not. You know, it actually just matters what the user experience is. And fundamentally, you know, if you have Xen support in a distro, basically, you know, the workflow is almost identical as it is with KVM. You know, you install your DOM0 Linux, you install your Xen packages, then you reboot, and at the end of the day, you know, then you start configuring your system and so on. And what you then have is basically just, you know, your package manager basically makes sure that your boot script's modified, and after the reboot, you basically have Xen running underneath your DOM0. Anyway, I will explain a little bit of that, more of that in some more detail. Let's just talk about basic concepts in Xen. So, again, you know, the graph here, host hardware, hypervisor, and your control DM and guests. Now, fundamentally, Xen gets controlled via a piece of software which we call a tool stack, which sits on Xen APIs and then talks to some sort of console, which might be a command line interface or a cloud orchestration stack or a graphical, you know, tool to control your environment. And as Holger stated earlier, there's a lot of options today to do this, and they work independently and cover many different hypervisors today. So one of the things which where Xen actually becomes a little bit interesting is a concept which we call this disaggregation. And a basic idea there is to take functionality which typically runs in DOM 0 and move that into a separate VM. And that's actually quite interesting, because if you look at, you know, if you care about security, you will see that everything which is marked green here is actually part of your trusted computing base. And if you do care about security, you fundamentally want to reduce your trusted computing base and create boundaries which make it difficult for attackers to get into your system. So some of the things you can do in Xen is you can run individual device drivers, you know, in a deprivileged VM. You can run your device model, i.e. QMU, which is a lot of code and which can be quite easily attacked in a specific domain, which we call stub domain, and you can do a lot of other cool stuff with this. And actually, for the most part, this is quite easy to set up as well. There's also some other interesting properties about this. For example, you know, it increases robustness, you know, of your system. For example, one use case which we're starting to see being used by larger cloud providers today is to basically take your Ethernet stack and run it in a separate driver domain. And you know, fundamentally, you know, if your Ethernet stack, you know, you can even go and set it up such that it gets killed and restarted, you know, on a timer without affecting the rest of the system. But again, you know, I'll get to some of this a little bit later. So I wanted to talk about Xen variants a little bit. So Xen's been around for 10 years, and because of that, we've seen, you know, different tool stacks evolve for different purposes. Now, the basis for all of these are fundamentally the hypervisor. We have fundamentally three different main tool stacks, you know, supported by Xen today. So it's basically a default tool stack which comes with Xen, which is called Excel. And that basically allows you to control a single host, and it gives you, you know, basic functionality, including live migration and stuff like that. Then, you know, if you want a bit more, and also it depends on what kind of tools you want to use on top of that, because each tool stack, of course, exposes an API and then talks to various tools on top of that. So you have, you know, if you want to use Virsh or or Virt Manager, you know, you can basically just use Xen with libvirt. The third area, the third tool stack, is really what we call XAPI, and that is sort of a mixture in between, you know, your cloud orchestration stack and what you would normally use with Xen, and it allows you to span and manage multiple hosts via one interface. And that's kind of the options you have. And when you use Xen, you have to look really carefully at which one you choose, because that ultimately affects your user experience. Then, of course, you know, there's different commercial products built on top of these, and actually, you know, these different products use some of these different tool stacks. So we have Oracle VM, which basically uses, you know, the default tool stack, plus some extensions they added. We have Huawei UVP, which uses Xen with libvirt, and then a Citrix Xen server, which uses the XAPI tool stack. And of course, there's a lot of very large users which use Xen in different, you know, with those different tool stacks as well. So we have Amazon Web Services, for example, which uses the Excel tool stack. Then there's, you know, SUSE Cloud, which basically uses libvirt with Xen, but, you know, it also works with KVM. So if you want to have the option to fundamentally change your hypervisor underneath, then you would probably want to use libvirt. And you know, as we covered earlier, performance-wise, there isn't so much of a difference between the various hypervisors. It really depends on your workload. And you start with your workload, and then you basically, you know, based on your workload, on your user interface and some other properties, you know, like supportability, you know, your familiarity, you know, what software you're familiar with, and so on, then you can basically choose what's optimal for you. And of course, you know, there's Rackspace, a public cloud, which uses XAPI with OpenStack. Let me talk a little bit about the different types of virtualization in Xen, and show you how it works. So I want to start out with parallel virtualization. So the basic idea of parallel virtualization is really quite simple. You know, so fundamentally, on the left you see DOM 0. You basically have your hardware drivers there, and on top of that, you basically have a shim, which we call PV backends, which control the hardware drivers in your DOM 0. Those shims today, they're part of the Linux kernel. Then you have, in the guest, you have a corresponding set of shims, which we call PV frontends, which basically talk via ring buffer to each other. In fact, if you want to find out how this works in a little bit more detail, there's a talk on Xen on ARM tomorrow where Stefano, the Xen ARM maintainer, explains how this works. And fundamentally, really what happens is that when a guest, you know, basically accesses I/O and other functionality, the requests get just routed, you know, from the PV front ends to the PV back ends, and then via the hardware drivers, which come in your host OS, which then talks to the hardware, and a whole flow goes back. And that's really quite fast, as we've seen with the benchmarks before. And also, it works on any system, even if it doesn't have hardware virtualization extensions. One variant of this is what we call driver domain. So I mentioned disaggregation before, where you can basically just take functionality which normally runs in domain zero and just run it in a deprivileged VM. And the concept there is exactly the same, only that fundamentally when I set this up, that basically my PV backend, you know, runs fundamentally in a small guest OS, in a small guest VM. We also have a specialized, very small kernel, which we call mini OS, to do this as well, such that you don't actually have that, such that you don't have to carry around the baggage of a full of a full kernel of a full Linux distribution. And that gives you a few advantages, such as additional, you know, security, additional isolation, and robustness. So let's look at how a hardware virtualization works in Xen. So we call hardware virtualization HVM. And basically, when a guest VM accesses an I/O device or any hardware functionality, basically what happens is the kernel traps at the time the memory is accessed. You know, control is delegated to the hypervisor. The hypervisor then reroutes, you know, that request to DOM 0 to the device model, which then emulates the operation, and the results get sent back to your virtual machine. You know, the key advantage of that is that you don't have to have a PV-enabled kernel to do this. But, you know, again, as we've seen with the benchmarks before, that has a performance penalty in it. And, of course, we can do the same as the same disaggregation approach again, where fundamentally we run the device model instead of a DOM 0 within its own separate VM, which we call stub domain. And that's very easy to set up. It's actually just, you know, a flag in a configuration file. There is a difference in this particular case compared to device driver domains, in that we fundamentally create a stub domain per guest. And in fact, you can also, you know, have some sort of hybrid approach where you have some guests using stub domains and others not. So this gives me, you know, the basic sort of building blocks for Xen. Now it's worth looking at some variants of that, which we call a virtualization spectrum. So if you look at this table, at the top it shows you the different types of operations. Then we have, you know, some things virtualized in software, VS, hardware virtualization, VH, and para virtualization. And if you look at the table, you know, see at the bottom everything's fully para virtualized. At the top, you know, basically either everything's virtualized in hardware or in software. And I just overlaid, you know, a few colors there in terms of performance, really. So full virtualization, you know, within Xen is typically pretty bad because, you know, basically we need to emulate disk and network, you know, totally. And you know, in a production environment, quite often you wouldn't use a full virtualization. You would use one of the variants, which basically gives you, you know, additional performance. And there's a number of options you have. You know, you can just drop some PV drivers, you know, for disk and network, you know, into a guest VM, You know, for example, you know, I have there's PV drivers for Windows, which you can just install, and then you get performance benefits. And there's also a mode called PVHVM, which basically uses power virtualization for interrupts and timers, which gives you additional performance benefits. But what we're starting to see now is that also from fully power virtualized, there's actually benefits to start using hardware. So in Xen 4.4, originally this was actually planned to be in Xen 4.3, but it didn't quite make it. There's actually also an option to use hardware extension with power virtualization. And really what we're seeing there is that the boundaries are starting to blur. Now from a user's perspective, you actually really choose, you know, either PV or HVM, and based on the drivers which are installed, and based on the capabilities, you know, of your host OS, you know, Xen under the hood just picks the best option for you. So I want to talk a little bit about XAPI. Now, I brought up this picture, you know, earlier just to provide a little bit of a reminder, you know, where XAPI sits. And I wanted to cover, you know, a little bit about what it is, because we're seeing quite a lot of momentum and a growing user base user base around XAPI today. So what do I get? You know, it gives me a lot of extra functionality, which I don't really get with the default Xen tool stack. I get things like VM life cycle management, and also the capability to basically just transfer VM, you know, images between, you know, between VMs and hosts without setting up shared storage. You know, fundamentally just, you know, throwing an image over to another host via TCP/IP. Things like resource pool, event tracking, upgrade and patching capability, you know, performance monitoring, and a lot of, you know, usability features such as templates, and there's also Open vSwitch built in by default. And that's part of the reason, you know, why quite a lot of people are starting to use XAPI instead of the default tool stack. XAPI today comes in two variants. It comes as an ISO, which you can download from xenproject.org, which you can install on your machine. It's a bit of a closed appliance. You basically get CentOS 5. We will be moving to CentOS 6 at some point soon. There's the other variant where you basically get XAPI packages from Linux distros right now. There's only Debian and Ubuntu, but for example, CentOS 6.4 is in progress and almost completed. Then it's worth talking about orchestration stacks and UIs. And again, that's where your choice of tool stack becomes relevant. So one of the key reasons why XAPI today is quite is enjoying an increasing user base is because you get CloudStack, OpenStack, and OpenNebula integration. There's also a number of open source and commercial UIs, and I just wanted to pick out one where there's a lot of momentum and which works quite a lot with the Xen community right now, which is called Xen Orchestra. And this is quite a cool new project. But coming back to this point about other interfaces, you know, if you use Xen with Excel, you can use OpenNebula, for example, or Eucalyptus. If you use it with libvirt, again, you can interface with OpenStack. Just to really show, you know, fundamentally, you know, the choice of what you're interfacing on top with really impacts what you should use underneath the hood. So I wanted to talk a bit about challenges for open source hypervisors, and particularly in the cloud space. So I tried to find some sources. There's loads of sources, you know, to figure out what are the main blockers, you know, to adoption of cloud. And really, you know, what a lot of people feel very strongly about, and you can look at various different research there. Security and reliability and quality of service always come out, you know, on top. Now this, we actually ran our own survey, which we started just before Christmas, and we had about 5,000 responses so far, and the result there is quite similar. You know, it comes down to robustness, performance, scalability, and, you know, security. So let's talk a little bit about scalability and security. So I covered disaggregation conceptually beforehand. If you're interested in this, there's actually a few really interesting papers. So one, which is called Breaking Up is Hard to Do. There's actually one now, it's Breaking Up is Easy as well, which is being written. That takes this whole idea of disaggregation to an extreme, where fundamentally, you know, basically VMs are almost used like processes in a traditional operating system. In that model, fundamentally, seems like every single time a command gets set to its tool stack, a VM is spun up, the command's executed, and then the VM's killed again. And that was a research project, and I really just wanted to see, you know, what this would do to a system, and you know, whether it performs well, and so on and so forth. And what's quite interesting, you know, even so, you know, intuitively you would think your performance penalty would be quite high. It actually wasn't, and it actually turns out that some system properties people really care about are positively impacted by this. And that's, for example, why we're seeing disaggregation coming to XAPI and also commercial products like SenServer this year and next year. But the root of this whole idea of this disaggregation really comes from desktop use cases. So there's really, you know, two significant there's one open source project which is worth mentioning, which is called CubesOS, and that uses this disaggregation project basically as an approach to sandbox applications in a VM. It uses things like network domains, storage domains, and so on, and basically different types of applications run in different Xen VMs, and then they have a modified X Windows server, which basically aggregates, you know, all these different activities which are happening in different VMs into one consistent user view, and then they have policies such as, you know, every single time I open a PDF document, you know, create a throwaway VM for me. And that's really very interesting for the security conscious desktop user. There's a similar product called Citrix Xen Client XT, which does exactly the same thing. It's just commercial, so I'm not going to cover that really at all. And there's prototypes for XAPI today as well. So I covered on benefits of disaggregation before. Well, you know, the obvious one is more security. Interestingly, it also gives you increased serviceability and flexibility. What I mean by that is really you don't have to take your entire system down to make changes, right? So I can replace parts of my system dynamically while the rest of the system stays running, which is really quite interesting for uptime in cloud production environments. Now, right now, for server use cases, you can do this, but you have to actually write, you know, code yourself. But in the next year or two, a lot of this functionality will be pre-integrated, you know, in tool stacks like XAPI. Of course, you know, robustness increases. For example, you know, if you look at some of those use cases I mentioned beforehand, such as running an Ethernet driver in a driver domain, the impact of restarting my driver domain quite regularly is actually not too bad. You know, so typically, the outage you get when you restart a driver domain is about 200 to 300 milliseconds, based on your kernel version and Xen version. Now, where it becomes counterintuitive is that you actually get slightly better performance if you use disaggregation quite heavily as well. And the reason for that is that fundamentally, in a Xen-based system today, DOM 0 is somewhat of a bottleneck. And your domain 0 kernel can also become a bottleneck. And if you have a more distributed system, fundamentally, that goes away. And the same applies also for scalability. So you can get increased scalability as well. So I just wanted to show you a quick picture of how XAPI looks like before and after disaggregation, right? So here, for example, you have two hosts with DOM 0, and there's a lot of different services running in DOM 0 in a pre-disaggregated XAPI environment. Now, what disaggregation does, really, it just takes all these different services and runs those in separate VMs. And what's quite noticeable here is, you know, you see the extra boundaries in here, and you also see that your green area, the trusted computing base, has shrunk quite a lot. And then there's a very fast communication channel in there as well, which is called DBus, which basically allows those specialized VMs to talk to each other. And that's one of the reasons why performance and scalability actually improves. So just to summarize on a security point, you know, even without those advanced features, the trusted computing base in Xen is actually much smaller than your typical type 2. The hypervisor is quite thin. But one thing I did want to pick out is something we call the Xen security modules, because that's quite cool and interesting, particularly, you know, if you care about ultra-secure environments. So we have something called XSM and Flask, which is being developed by the NSA and maintained by the NSA. And it's basically, XSM is the equivalent of the Linux security modules. Flask is fundamentally the Xen equivalent of SC Linux. And it's really interesting, it was fundamentally, you know, if you know SC Linux, you can basically use XSM and Flask. And all the tools and architecturally, it's the same thing. It's just different object classes which map onto Xen APIs and features. And some of the things you can do with this is what I'm showing in this red area, really, right? So if I take my driver domain here, I could, for example, you know, within a network driver domain, configure SC Linux such that that specific domain can only access functionality relevant to networks, and then I can put a Flask policy in place, which basically controls the interface between a user VM and Xen, such that that domain can only really access APIs relevant to drivers. And so I can really build very strong boundaries between those VMs. Besides XSM, there's actually a lot of other advanced security features in Xen. Most of them are not switched on by default, and actually most of them are actually quite simple to use. There's a brief tutorial. It's about 20 slides, which are really worth looking at if you care about security. I'm bringing this up because, you know, that the original talk for that was given at FOSDEM about 4 months ago, and we had, I think, almost 180,000 views and loads of downloads for that presentation, which really is another sign, you know, that users actually care about security. I was somewhat surprised about this, you know, really. I would normally talk about the ARM hypervisor, but actually I'm not going to do this. If you care about Xen on ARM, come and see Stefano Stabilini tomorrow. He's going to talk at the same time in the room across the door, and we'll also give a demo. Another thing which is worth mentioning is library operating systems. So let me just explain, you know, what a library operating system is in a Xen context, right? So Xen fundamentally exposes two sets of interfaces. There's the hypervisor interface, and you can think about that in terms of, you can think about that of control plane. And then there's the PV interface, which you can think about as data plane, really. And these interfaces are quite stable, and fundamentally you can basically build a language runtime directly on top of that. And there's a number of those. You know, there's Erlang, there's Haskell, and there's a runtime for Camel today. And that's really interesting from a security perspective, and also from a low startup perspective for applications in those special VMs. And of course, you know, because you don't have a whole kernel running, you know, in those VMs, it also allows extreme fast migration of VMs across hosts. So I'm covering this because one of these library OSs, Mirage OS, has recently been added to the Xen project incubator. Mirage OS basically uses OCaml, which is becoming increasingly popular in the defense industry, airplane industry, and other, you know, industries which care about. I lost my thread now. Which care about, you know, formal verification, you know, of your systems. And basically, you know, the way how you can really imagine this, it's basically fundamentally, you know, a library which of protocols, of standard network protocols implemented on top of Xen. And it's also going to be heavily used in the next generation of XAPI, the disaggregation Xen architecture, which incidentally also happens to be implemented in OCaml, right? So if you care about that, there's a good introduction presentation again at the bottom, or you can also find me later. There's quite a bit of momentum building up around this project. And the first release, I think, is planned to be launched at OSCON in July. So let me just conclude with a few things related to the project, and then open up for questions. So the Xen 4.3 release is about to come. We're having release candidates. I think the second release candidate came out yesterday. We have regular test days, so there's one test day today, another one planned for in 2 weeks, and hopefully we'll be able to release shortly after that. If not, we'll have another test day. There's quite a lot of features in there. I just listed a few of them, you know, like out-of-the-box Xen support for ARM servers, additional scope for Xen security modules, improved libvirt support. We're also switching to upstream QMU instead of a branched version of QMU. And then there's lots of other stuff around scalability, performance, NUMA support, and so on. And the latest update has just been posted a week ago. So we basically post regularly on a main Xen mailing list and what's in and out, and you can monitor that quite easily if you care. Another interesting project is getting Xen 4 and XAPI into stock CentOS 6.4. Now, this is a project, you know, which has started a little bit less than a year ago. It's been basically driven by CentOS 5 users, particularly large users, which wanted to move from CentOS 5 to CentOS 6. And as was mentioned in a previous talk, if you want to run, you know, Xen on CentOS 6 today, you can do this, but you have to get packages from external repositories. And fundamentally, you know, we wanted to get to a point where we can basically just do yum install Xen out of the CentOS repo. That's been mostly really a packaging and validation problem. And really teams from CentOS, Citrix, GoDaddy, Rackspace, and a few others, which I can't name, have been working on this. And we were quite close to releasing this about three, four weeks ago. And then we got caught out by, you know, the upgrade from Xen 4.2.1 to Xen 4.2.2. And so now we have to redo, you know, all the testing. But hopefully this is gonna be coming very soon. We've kind of kept this quiet because the CentOS community is a little bit cagey about delivering something which is in beta and not, you know, and not fully validated. Also, the Xen community has been changing a lot. That's been a process which started about 2 years ago. You know, maybe you saw the earlier graph. You know, where more contributors, more diversity is actually happening in the project. And really that's led to more collaboration and openness. And one sign of that is the recent move, you know, of Xen from Citrix to the Linux Foundation and the number of vendors, you know, who are backing that project. But there's also other, you know, indicators that this is happening. And so on the right, you see the activity, you know, on the mailing list, on our developer mailing list. And we had a bit of a trough there around 2008 and 2009, which is when all those voices started, like Xen is dying. But fundamentally, you know, if you look at the trend and all of what I'm seeing, the project's definitely not dying. It's actually been slowly growing and steadily. So one of the big things, you know, which is happening within the community is, you know, more focus on structure and process and so on and so forth. And a big part of that is really to establish a shared and open test infrastructure. And the goal there is to increase development velocity. So we actually had a hackathon last week with all the developers, and there was a lot of discussion around this. We basically wanted to move from, you know, like Xen had this 9 months or 12 months release cycle, and we want to align much more, you know, with the kernel release cycle and make releases, you know, every 4 months. And to do that, we need to have a much better shared test infrastructure. There's also a lot more focus on working with distros. Part of the reason why Xen was dropped from distros, besides of the fact, you know, that Xen wasn't in the Xen support wasn't in the kernel, was that fundamentally, you know, the Xen community was very inwards looking and hasn't really worked closely with distros, and that's changing. And you know, for example, that project with CentOS has actually led to mutual understanding, you know, of the challenges distros are facing. And so I'm quite excited about what's happening in this space and some of the collaborations and interesting projects which are coming out of that. There's also a lot more focus on downstreams such as OpenStack, you know, better libvirt and virt manager integration, and just generally, you know, working a lot more closely with other related open source projects. Another example is is actually a collaboration which is happening within the Linaro community around Xen on ARM as well. And there's also changes around, XAPI and how we release this, and so on and so forth, because, traditionally, XAPI was a little bit of a mess because fundamentally the code base and the packaging were sort of put together into one big lump, which made it quite difficult, again, to work with distros. Just to conclude, how do you get started with Xen projects? Well, we have a new website. The first thing is to go to xenproject.org, look at the help and user menus. There's all pointers to mailing lists, IRC. The Xen IRC channel typically has between 250 and 300 people on it. And if you want to know more, just find me and I can get you hooked up with the right people. There's also a lot of events, either online or face-to-face events, or events like this around Xen. And they're always listed, on the events page, which, I'm keeping up to date. Test days and document days are a very easy way to get engaged with the community and get started. There's usually the developers and other users hanging out, on IRC channels and helping each other. And there's a number of resources. I will post these slides on slideshare.net Xencom Manager. And I'm ready for questions. I've ran over a bit, but I started. Started a little bit. Always get me on Twitter. Thank you.